Good morning, and I will restate that Justice Perrier is unavailable today. He will weigh in by reviewing the audio and visual of the arguments presented this day. He has reviewed the briefs and material submitted to the court. So the deciding group as to this will be myself, Justice Gibbons, and Justice Perrier. With that, as we go forward with the State of Nevada Department of Business and Industries et al. And Nevada Association Services, Inc. et al., if counsel will just state for the record who they are and if they wish to if you wish to reserve time.
And just so if I could make a brief disclosure before I proceed. I own a property in the Christopher communities of Southern Highlands, Golf Club, and RMI Management LLC is the management agent for that association, Christopher Community. So I pay monthly dues to, I write checks to RMI on a monthly basis. I don't feel that's a disqualifying interest, but I wanted to make a disclosure to the parties. And
I don't believe it is either, Your Honor. Daniel Ebihara, Deputy Attorney General, is here with Senior Deputy Attorney General David Pope, representing the Financial Institutions Division. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time. I also have, until last year, I was writing checks to RMI, too.
So okay. I'm
not going to disqualify myself, either. This case is based on a granting of a preliminary injunction by the District Court against the Financial Institutions Division for issuing an advisory opinion. The advisory opinion says three things. One, that collection costs and fees can be included in the super priority lien, but that the 9-month cap applied to that super priority lien still applies to all those costs and fees. Number two, that the costs and fees that the collection agency chooses to charge should be itemized and approved of by the association in their collection contracts. And three, that the collection agencies or associations don't have to go through a civil action in order to implement the super priority lien. In granting the preliminary injunction, the district court made two fundamental legal errors. The first was that the financial institution had no jurisdiction to regulate, interpret, administer, or review the provisions of 116. Now, the provisions of going through 116 is the very act which brings them under, which requires them to be a license under Chapter 649.
Isn't 116, though, the province of the real estate division?
It is under their regulatory authority. That is correct.
But what doesn't, aren't the associations and agents regulated by the real estate division? And by definition, under Chapter 116, the real estate division, I believe, is designated as the regulating agent for any proceeding under that chapter.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the original thought, and I don't think that that actually carried through. In 1999, the Attorney General's office had issued an advisory opinion, which indicated both that yes, that there was the foreclosure procedures did require a license, but that the associations could cover it. But it created some confusion in what they could do. It created a regulatory vacuum. There's nothing in 116 which addresses what a collection agency can and can't do. They can't determine whether they keep their license or not, and they have no regulatory authority over it. So it created this regulatory void that when 649.020 subsection 3 was enacted in, I think it was 2005, to include the actions of community managers and their collection agencies and employees to, when they institute foreclosure proceedings, they have to be licensed because they, as one commentator put it, they're doing the most important collection agency work of all. They're determining whether or not they can take somebody's home. So that idea is, it goes to the very heart of the idea of whether or not that license is really anything more than a tax. It's whether or not they're either regulated or they're not regulated. And that's essentially the crux of it. And I know this because they're not even agreeing to itemize their costs and fees in their contract. That's something that's also part of that advisory opinion, and yet, you know, it's subject to contention because it's under 116.
But couldn't the real estate division propose similar regulations to the, it's the Real Estate Commission and or is the governing body and do accomplish the same thing for the citizens of Nevada? Does it have to be done under the Financial Institutions Division?
The reason why it's done under the Financial Institutions Division is because the statute says it should. I mean, right. If we're starting from scratch, I suppose you could rework it, but we're not. The legislature has actually created expressed an opinion in what it thinks the law should be. And the law is that the Financial Institutions Division should regulate and administer that behavior. And they do this with other collection agencies, as the commentators have pointed out in their testimony when this law was passed. You know, a collection agency cannot hide behind another law by saying, you know, well, you can't look at this law, and then say, you know, so all my actions are somewhat justifiable.
Well, counsel, what's being put forth, though, is not necessarily hiding behind laws, but the authority of financial institutions to do what they're doing. And I guess the real question or the crux for us as we see it, and I don't really disagree with possibly what you're putting forth as to how things should work, but the real issue for us is that NRS 116.620 provides certain things the division may do, and 116.623, the division shall provide by regulations and so on. And that's to one, the real estate division. The question is, how do we get the linkage with 649.385 to allow financial institutions to get into the regulations under 116? How do we transverse that?
Well,
and where's the authority, just to come to the chase?
Well, the authority is that the collection agency actions are regulated and administered solely by the Financial Institutions Division. So their actions under 116 would also be subject to scrutiny.
Seems to limit who can opine as to the application.
I think that's an interesting question, and the advisory opinion idea or concept, I think, is somewhat of a ruse. All right, they wouldn't have preferred to have gone through a disciplinary or administrative procedures if they had clearly violated 116. They wouldn't have preferred to say, oh, I want to have this discussion when I'm going through an administrative hearing when my license is at stake. The advisory opinion is nothing more than a legal interpretation. Now, at that time, there were no legal interpretations by any administrative agency. So there was this confusion and understanding about how these collection agencies should act and operate. You know, the Financial Institutions Division had been receiving complaints about that. So, you know, they instituted the advisory opinion regarding, you know, how this conduct should occur. So if, and I do mean if the real estate division had determined that this wasn't the law prior to that, this advisory opinion would not have been issued. And even subsequent to that, the advisory opinion by the CIC, which is not the real estate division, issued their advisory opinion, is not in conflict with the one provided by the Financial Institutions Division. So I guess if you're saying that there's a conflict in the interpretation of the law, I'm saying, how about the one that's right? How about the one that's correct? And then, you know, that the court has determined that that is essentially the way the law should be interpreted in this particular instance. But in terms of jurisdiction, I don't think there's any confusion about the law. That, you know, Financial Institutions Division, not the Real Estate Division, has the authority to determine whether or not you're acting within your legal parameters. And that's where those complaints go. The Real Estate Division can't affect their licenses. The real estate division doesn't have any provision for the collection agency activities, and they don't have any authority over what associations do with their collection agency activities anyway.
But wouldn't that call for them to work hand in hand together?
Yes.
For a request from the institutions division to the real estate division to clarify what provisions were made?
Well, how about, but if there is no, if I mean, there is no apparent conflict, if there is no, if there has been no previous determination that this, that they, that every determination about whether or not you violated a law in another instance should go, there should be a request. I think I point out in my brief that, you know, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which the Financial Institution Division is also obligated to enforce against every collection agency, requires that you can't engage in illegal actions when you're doing that. Does every instance have to go through the district attorney's office in order to
they're saying the Financial Institution Division doesn't have the authority to create. They have to accept whatever the real estate division puts out there. And that seems to be where we're at odds. The real estate division didn't say anything. Finance institutions said something. And I'm getting a maybe as to whether this was ever ratified by real estate. I don't know because it's not part of the record. And so I'm left with a great big hole in this in terms of whether or not this position that's been taken by financial institutions has ever been ratified, so to speak, even after the fact, or if it's just something that's out there that should be ignored because they didn't have authority to make this based upon what the revised statutes provide. And I understand your position about violating a law, but we're getting in the ability of the financial institutions to dictate what is this little narrow area. They're allowed to enforce, I don't dispute that, but this other area that they're looking to now enforce, do they have the authority to create it? That's kind of what we're about.
Well, I don't think they're creating anything. I think that it is the law is what the law is. I mean, the statute, the opinion doesn't go outside of the parameters of the statute, the way that the advisory opinion was written, simply read the statute. I mean, it's not something that requires a complex system of, you know, necessary interpretation in order to get to, I think, the conclusion that the financial institutions reached. If the statute is clear, is there a reason to go to the real estate division? And I think I'll go back to the collection agency itemization of cost. That is clearly part of 116A. That is clearly part of 649 and part of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And yet, you know, they don't do I need a real estate division opinion in order to say, to tell the financial institutions division before you can enforce it? It seems cumbersome and it seems unworkable. If you have a determination that is based on the law and that it seems clear, there doesn't necessarily need to be a necessity forward and that's what the administrative process is for. And I'll get to that, I guess, in my rebuttal on the irreparable harm.
Now, I chewed up a lot of your time. Is there another point you want to raise before counsel gets up to respond to what you stated so we at least have a...
The irreparable harm is, I think, pretty clear, too. And I think there's a lot of there's a lot of federal court, United States Supreme Court cases that say this. The process of the license is a property right, but so is part of the disciplinary process. There are two sides of the same coin. You can't go to the court and say, my due process rights violate my due process rights. The right and the responsibility are the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Pat Riley appearing on behalf of the respondents. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Nevada Association Services, RMI Management, and Angus Interior Collections. And I also belong to an HOA myself, and I don't like paying the dues every month, but the dues pay for the common elements, the parks, the landscaping, and when someone abandons the property, they pay to keep the property up, landscape from overgrowing, algae growing in the pools, and as you are all probably aware, in the last couple of years, the real estate market in Las Vegas and the state of Nevada has been devastated. There have been many foreclosures. There have been many people abandoning their properties, and when they stop paying the bank, they stop paying the HOA as well. And that's where my clients come in, because HOAs don't really have the resources or the ability to collect debts. And if it weren't for my clients, our HOA fees would go up substantially because the HOAs wouldn't be able to collect the amounts that aren't being paid.
What exactly do your clients do, you know, to collect, and what procedures do they follow?
Sure, there are a number of different procedures. There are demand letters, there are notices of lien, there's a statutory lien created, but the lien needs to record needs to be made to protect the lien. The foreclosure procedure is done. Ultimately, there are attempts to collect. There are negotiations with the homeowners, et cetera.
So they do the private foreclosures themselves?
Yes, exactly, the trustee sales. And they don't happen a lot, but they do happen occasionally. So now I want to cut to the petition that was filed by Mr. Adams. There are two questions presented, and only two questions in the petition. One is, what is the scope of the super priority lien pursuant to NRS 116.3116, and does an HOA or collection agency have to file a civil action pursuant to NRS 116.3116? You asked counsel during his argument, does the Financial Institutions Division have the authority to create this kind of law? Well, the questions in the petition necessarily and by their own terms require an interpretation of NRS Chapter 116. When the commissioner received this petition, he should have simply said, I can't answer it. I don't have the jurisdiction to do it.
But isn't 116.3116 talks about priority of liens, first mortgage, first trust deeds, if the liens are prior or not prior to that, I don't know exactly how second trust deeds fix and what happens if they're recorded before there's a default in the association dues. I mean, it's kind of an interesting question. That sounds kind of like financial ones. It involved banks and all. So tell me why you think it should just be interpreted under the real estate provisions.
Well, it's a very interesting question, and I would submit to the court that you will probably all be dealing with that question in approximately in a year and a half or so, but in another matter and in another proceeding. NRS Chapter 649, if you open up Chapter 649, it's all about two things: licensing responsible individuals to collect debts and prohibiting collection practices. It's about collection practices. The petition in this case was not requesting an advisory opinion as to someone's collection practices. What the commissioner was doing was making a substantive determination about the interpretation of law outside of his bailiwick, if you will. And there's a reason when you compare Chapter 649 and Chapter 116, they do very different things. For example, 649.375 lists out prohibited practices. It's titled collection agencies. They conduct annual examinations of collection agencies under 649.056. And the problem here is that the rights to interpret NRS Chapter 6116 are reserved exclusively to the real estate division. And so you have statutes that are directly on point, such as 116.623, that say that if you have a question of interpretation of law under Chapter 116, it has to be done by the Real Estate Division or the Commission on Common Interest Communities. By the way, I do want to answer another question that one of you had about what the Real Estate Division or the Commission has or has not done in this case. When we had a hearing before Judge Johnson in the District Court and she was considering this, the Commission on Common Interest Communities had drafted but not yet adopted its own advisory opinion that was contrary to the advisory opinion that had already been adopted by Financial Institutions Division. After that hearing, but before she issued her decision, the Commission adopted that that advisory opinion, and it actually is part of the record in unadopted and adopted form, so you have that. And the problem that we have here, now we have a turf war because one government official didn't respect the boundaries of the other government agency, and now we've got two competing advisory
opinions. Well, I empathize with the Attorney General since they represent both of the entities.
I know.
So it's kind of a, you know, like that. So you have to take, they have to look at it and make their own independent conclusion on this.
And it creates all sorts of problems. And let's set aside the statutes for a minute. You have all of those. Let's use our common sense. The reason that there's this separation is because presumably the commissioner and his staff, they have expertise in financial institutions and collection agencies. That's why they're there. And presumably, the real estate division and the commission have expertise in real estate and common interest communities. That's why they're there. The problem is that the commissioner is essentially dabbling in real estate, so to speak.
Would you agree that if, in fact, the real estate division had interpreted 116, that the business and industries financial institutions division would follow that in their interpretation of their duties under 649?
Yes, and actually I've got a good example for you, and I've suggested this to Mr. Ebihara. The real estate division, after all this happened, adopted Regulation 199-09, which is also in the record, and what it does is it caps amounts that can be collected by collection agencies relating to HOAs. I think it's a $1,900 total cap, and then it has line item caps. And what I've suggested to the state is, look, if someone who's subject to that regulation charges more than what's than the cap allowed by the regulation, that to me would be a prohibited practice. You're essentially trying to collect an unlawful debt, and that
so all these all these amounts, if there was a suit in small claims court, then for with that type of limitation.
Well, that would be a private action, but I think the commissioner would have regulatory authority to pursue a collection agency that tries to collect amounts above and beyond that because there's a regulatory cap. Right. They'd essentially be trying to collect a debt that they're not lawfully entitled to collect, much as if they were trying to collect a debt that was barred by the statute of limitations, for example. The problem here is that the commissioner is interpreting Chapter 116 to determine what debts are lawful and what debts are unlawful, and that's just simply not within
its
wheelhouse.
Let's kind of work with the practical thing if we could. Right now, a lot of homes are underwater, and there may be their first trust deeds more than the amount of the house, so there's a default on these association dues. And so you probably don't want to take title of the property, you know, like that and do a foreclosure, I mean, because you don't have any equity in it. So if you go to sue these people for the association dues, you can file suit in justice court for whatever they owe and get a judgment against them and collect the money. So is that what they do? I mean,
well, this goes to the substantive problem that's being litigated in the district courts right now. There's a super priority lien, which takes precedence over the first deed of trust that's usually held by the bank.
That isn't that for like repair? Properties in disrepair or something?
No. What the fight is about, actually some of the attorneys are here today who are on the other side of these cases with me.
Okay.
Their contention is that the super priority lien is capped at 9 times monthly assessments. So in other words, if let's say somebody has run up a bill of $5,000 in unpaid assessments and there are another, you know, $2,000 in collection costs, and let's say your monthly assessment, it's kind of a misnomer, is $50 a month, the most the HOA can collect is $450. That's an argument that's being made down in these other cases in the district court. The problem with that is that publication costs alone are about $500 to conduct a foreclosure. And so this is the problem of where the commissioner was getting involved and getting tangled into this substantive discussion. And I did mention it in the record, one of the other problems with this petition is that it was made by a related entity to all of these parties who are in litigation, and they were essentially trying to go to the commissioner to get a regulatory opinion to advance their cause in these private lawsuits, which is essentially barred by the Nevada Administrative Code. That's the problem that we're having here. We're fighting over what the scope of the super priority lien is. My clients say they're entitled to recover collection fees and costs in addition to the so-called monthly amounts, because if they couldn't, you'd be fashioning a bow without any strings or arrows. Why would you possibly go out and try to collect these amounts if you can't get your collection fees and costs? And that's the substantive problem that we're all having.
So that's the one down the road we'll get.
That's the one down the road.
So right now we're just arguing over, is it the real estate division versus the financial institutions division has the right to do this regulation?
Right now we're talking about jurisdiction and procedure.
Okay.
There's one other thing. It didn't come up in argument, but the state always, I think, has to make this argument so they don't risk waiver, but they've contended that my client didn't follow administrative remedies and just filed a lawsuit. That argument is wrong for several reasons. Number one, Nevada Power Company versus District Court says that you only have to pursue administrative remedies if the agency has original jurisdiction. My clients should not have to submit to the jurisdiction of an agency on a matter in which they are challenging the original jurisdiction of the agency. That just doesn't make any sense at all. The district court judge took a look at this. She listened to lengthy oral argument. She issued a 17-page opinion after looking at the briefs of the parties for a week, so she gave this ample due consideration. My clients were threatened with regulatory proceedings. Angus and Terry was told that this advisory opinion was going to be immediately enforced, and we all know what that means. My clients had no obligation to sit on their hands and wait to be cited either for fines or even worse, possibly a temporary revocation of their license or permanent license revocation proceedings. And so that's why we brought this action. And that's the irreparable harm that they were facing, and that's why Judge Johnson issued her injunction. So unless the court has any other questions, I thank you, and I'd submit the matter.
Can I get 3 minutes, or do I get two?
Counsel, I'll give you three.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm just looking at the – oh, beautiful. How about we start off with not forgetting the law? The statute 649.020, subsection 3, says that the collection agencies who engage in non-judicial foreclosure proceedings, which these parties do, are subject to licensure under by the Financial Institutions Division. What they're saying to you is if the law is, well, if I think the law is unclear, then you can't enforce it. I mean, they get an opportunity to pick and choose which laws they want to follow and which laws they don't. Is a subject that is what I was trying to get to in the beginning part of my argument about whether or not they are regulated under an agency or not regulated at all. That's not a choice they get to make. They can't say, they can take any statute, and they will, any statute to say, this is too confusing, you should really leave it to somebody else. It's not a determination between, it's not a turf war, and it's not a decision between who gets to regulate collection agencies between the Financial Institutions Division and the Real Estate Division. The real Estate Division has no authority over collection agencies, only the Financial Institutions Division.
Counsel, as that argument, and it was elaborated in the record, that there seem to be two conflicting opinions.
How?
Out there. Is there, in fact, two conflicting opinions from your standpoint between the Finance and the Real Estate Division as to this issue now?
As I pointed out in my reply brief, their decision says collection fees are part of the super priority lien. The financial institution's opinion says collection fees are part of the super priority lien. The conclusion of the CIC opinion doesn't alter the FID opinion in any way. And by the way, they're talking about these petitioners allegedly being involved in some company, some other company, in an administrative hearing.
Today I don't care. Tomorrow I probably will.
But okay. Well, they just alluded to the fact that we violated the law, and essentially sued us for issuing an advisory opinion when some party
but
might have
been
involved.
What I am concerned about, if it's part of the record, as counsel was alluding to, is that we now have two conflicting, you're saying they're not conflicting, but two opinions out. And our read of the statute saying 116, who should be opining as to what it means, and then this other division has the responsibility to enforce that.
Right. And one, and at the time, they didn't. And number two, there were no regulations regarding the there weren't even any regulations regarding the disposition of advisory opinions pursuant to that statute.
Let me throw you another curve, and I'll give you time to answer it. Now that we have an opine as a 116 from the real estate division, does this matter now become moot?
Well, if you find that there is actually a conflict, but I believe if it did, that, you know, all these matters would be resolved, and I don't think that they are. You know, I guess the point is that you can't, the quandary that I think that this presents is that if you extend this decision out to, in its dicta, which, and I'm not, and it's not clear, to say that that decision has precedence, that decision has some serious legal problems to it. It ignores this statutory construction tenet of expressio unus est exclusio alternius. I actually
can you translate that? For my Latin is a little rusty.
It's that the inclusion of one is the exclusion of the others. And if it mentions this, the chairman of the CIC went to the legislature in 2009 to try and include attorney's fees and collection costs in that super priority lien, and the legislature said no. And that's part of the record. And then in 2011,
that's part of an argument for another day, which is not today. We're still dealing with this fundamental. So give me your best take on why the court should reverse what the district court.
Because the financial institutions division had the jurisdiction to issue this opinion. If you wanted a determination about whether or not, you're exactly right, whether or not which decision is ultimately correct, then that decision will probably be played out in the district court hearing in this case. But for the time being, in the determination about whether or not, at that time, the financial institution had the jurisdiction and the ability to determine what the collection fees and how they can be charged by a collection agency it licenses, it has the jurisdiction to do it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for the arguments this day. This matter will stand submitted, and as I indicated previously, Justice Perry will participate in the final deliberation as of this matter. We are in